This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Welcome to episode 122. What Did You Watch This Week? Right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
This is Mike.
And I'm John.
And we're going to talk about the very little material we watched.
Yeah. I did not watch an awful lot of stuff, but, you know, in fairness, it's, you know.
It's not a lot Thursday. On. Oh, it is a Thursday, yes.
Thursday, and we just recorded on Saturday, so right. We haven't had a big gap in
and
between.
The summer season, there wasn't much this year that either one of us really picked up.
Right.
So I think that kind of helps with the minimalist we have.
Right. And, you know, the only good thing so far this summer was Cloak and Dagger, and that's over.
That was excellent.
So
that was excellent.
That kind of cuts that out.
Except is Sinner technically a summer season show?
Yep.
That's pretty decent.
Yeah.
That's pretty decent. But yeah, someone the other day was like, I saw someone posted the other day, like, should I start watching The Runaways or Cloak and Dagger? I'm like, Cloak and Dagger, please.
Yeah. Runaways was its own thing. They've announced that the second season's coming back on December 21st. I wasn't jumping out of my skin excited.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. It's not a bad show, but it definitely didn't grip me like a lot of other shows have.
Right.
So, right by the testicles. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what'd you watch this week?
Mostly Sinner. I finished it. The first season one. And I watched the first two episodes of season two.
Excellent.
And I watched Castle Rock episode 6.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to save the show, I watched Mom and Dad.
Oh, good. Because otherwise, this would have been the last episode.
But that's kind of, I mean, I did watch another, I watched a documentary and, but yeah.
Yeah, the only other thing that I watched on top of that list was two more episodes of Shut Eye season two.
Oh, I watched a couple episodes of Happy Ending. That is a great show. That is very funny.
I was telling you, very funny.
Yeah, but I'm glad I have it now to watch when I want.
Right,
a couple episodes here and there, and I can try and savor some of them. It's a good sitcom.
Yes,
it's a shame it's all done actually.
Right,
because it's good.
Yeah,
it's not. There's some episodes that are just and then there's some that are just off the charts hilarious.
Absolutely.
But one of the things I've noticed is like when we have like an evolution of a sitcom, the characters themselves change as they go up through the story arc. Like, JD didn't start out how he finished.
Right.
You know, the over-the-top, just whatever. Same thing with Elliot. All the characters changed on Scrubs from the beginning to the end to be just completely different than they were from the beginning.
Right.
But one thing I've noticed on Happy Endings is maybe it's because it didn't last long enough, and I do still have, like, 20 episodes left to watch. But the characters themselves haven't changed that dramatically.
Nope.
Like, they're the same over-the-topness they were from the beginning until, you know, where I'm at right now. Like, Eliza Coop's character is just the very much alpha female, everyone else's ideas are stupid, I'm the only one that has a good idea. I mean, like, that's hilarious to me. And the one episode I just finished watching recently was when she was in charge of the roof garden.
Yep, I was just going to ask if you had seen that one.
How she basically immediately dismisses everyone's ideas because they're all stupid. But then for whatever reason, she takes Penny's idea of just sleeping on it instead of just being not dominatrix, but
dictator
about it. And for whatever reason, she sleeps on it and she becomes not her.
Right.
She starts wearing sweatpants and everything's okay and she's all laid back.
She can put food on the floor.
Yeah,
doesn't even care.
She ate nachos. You know, yep. Like she's eating nachos. And I didn't get that big deal when they brought it up. She's just eating. It's like, whatever. And because someone's going to run against her for, like, president of the building.
The co-op board or whatever.
And then when, like, things get out of hand and no one's kept in line in the entire building and someone starts
to... They've got tutors.
Tutor math out of their apartment. They try to get her to come back. And when... I think that's the thing that gets her is they show her the pamphlet for tutoring her math. We're not zoned for that. And all of a sudden she jumps up and she's back into things and she's being her normal bossy self. And then the last line she screams out before they, like, cut the credits was, "Did I eat nachos?" Like, she was disgusted by it.
So. Yep. She was.
But, yeah, it's a fun show.
It is. It's a lot show. Of fun. It deserved to have more seasons than it got.
Yeah. Hopefully it ends on not...
It's pretty ambiguous.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
Hey, you know, I don't remember you talking about Killing Eve. Did you watch more of that or finish that off?
Oh, I finished that. I binged that in a weekend.
I know you did, but, like, I don't think we talked about it a lot because I was going to watch it, but right. I haven't.
Right.
Because the app I watch it on, is the volume's too quiet and it's too busy at work and I want to focus on it.
Right. And they've already announced casting for the second season. And
is it going to be like an anthology show with different people?
Nope. Nope. Same people.
I might have to watch it. I still have it here in my note as like something I need to watch.
Yeah. It's really good.
So I'm watching Orange is the New Black.
Yep.
And you had to wait a few minutes here, 15 or so. So if Kate and I could finish episode 11.
Yep.
Of this season. There's two episodes left this season. And one thing I must say is, like, and Kate and I talked about this, is, like, this season they're at Supermax because of the riot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really slow story that they're telling. And I feel like after we had talked about this, like, after 10 episodes, not a whole lot had happened. There's only 13 episodes in the season. Or on episode 10, it's like, stuff has happened, but not really a lot of stuff has happened. It's kind of weird. None of it unenjoyable to watch. It's just seems like usually there's more stuff going on. And maybe because there was so much going on in last season with the riot and the hostages of the guards and everything. I don't know. But this episode was titled, That Took a Turn for the Dark Side. Or That Took a Turn for the Dark, or whatever. Or That Got Dark Fast, or something like that.
Okay.
And that's exactly what happened this episode. And it ended on a very tremendous, like, cliffhanger. And so there's two episodes left. We're probably going to watch those tomorrow night. And, yeah. I don't know. It's definitely a better season this season than it has been.
So you definitely recommend it over previous seasons?
Yeah. Yeah. I would. And to be quite honest, I don't even think you could have... if you didn't watch any of the riot, I don't think it would matter. If you didn't watch any of the last season with the riot and the hostages and all that business, I don't think it would matter. I think you could watch the season and get it for the most part. So,
interesting.
Yeah. Anyways, Castle Rock, what did you think of this episode?
Got into a bit more of the mysticism.
It did?
It definitely felt more kingish. Things happened, and you know, there was more of the creepiness. The whole Willy and Deaf Guy thing,
that
was a little out there.
That was out there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he just stumbled. He saw them at the funeral,
right?
And then they went and talked to him. And why do you think they locked him in the camper?
I don't know. It's the whole thing was very bizarre.
Say the least.
Because he's sitting there translating for the deaf guy, and, you know, but the deaf guy would talk occasionally.
Because he made himself deaf recently.
Yeah. On purpose.
Yeah, because he hears a high-pitched ringing, and he's trying to become enlightened.
Yeah, which is the same thing that our hero has been hearing in his right ear.
Yeah.
As Melanie Linsky pointed out to him. It could be that... He locked him in there as like a, you know, you're like me, and now I want you to ascend like me kind of thing.
Yeah. It was weird.
It was very
kingish.
Yep. We still got this whole weird stuff going on with, the devil, air quotes.
Yeah.
And foster dad.
And he's like wearing the foster dead dad suit.
Yeah.
And shoes, but it looks almost like it's too big for him, but not really.
Right.
And then Sissy Spacek, you know, mom's, I don't know. She had such a weird look when he walked in the house and took his shoes off.
Yeah.
And then that's all they did with that. It was a weird episode.
They mentioned in there, like, something about the beam protects us all or something like that.
Yeah. It
kind of could be hinting towards the Dark Tower.
Oh, maybe.
No, because they had the beam of light, but I don't know. That was the sense that I got with the deaf guy and Willie there was
I know the Devil Kid.
Dark Tower kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. I know the Devil Kid did more talking this episode.
Yeah.
Like he and
I didn't like him anymore.
No. He and the sheriff, because he says he's going to help Sissy SpaceX character with the fact her mind's going, but he needs something out of the old Warren's car.
Yeah.
So the sheriff tries to go find it. And then there's a point where he's screaming at him, you shouldn't have left me in that trunk.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It was weird. When he got the vehicle.
Yeah.
And he basically held a guy at gunpoint.
Yeah, he stole it. Yeah.
Because the guy's like, no, it's part of my collection. He's like, no, I'm going to buy it from you. I need something.
And it was crushed.
Yeah.
It was on the stack of crushed cars.
Yeah. So it wasn't doing him any good. But, yeah, he held him at gunpoint.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then the devil, that's what I'm going to keep calling him. And once again, we had Jane Levy's character, who's just completely a throwaway.
Yeah.
Like, she answers the phone as she's putting out a for sale sign. And she's like, yeah, she's inside. Hold on, I'll get her. Like, that was her role in this episode.
Because it's weird. It's like she's too big of a name to be a nobody. And maybe something's going to come up later, but
yeah,
still.
And King does this a lot, but Melanie Lynskey's character has magical powers, but they're basically downplayed right to shit. Like, she should be the main character kind of thing. You know, she goes and she tells our intrepid hero here. See, that's how much I care. I'm not even.
Yeah, I can't think of Henry or Harry or some shit. Yeah. Maybe, I don't know.
So she goes and tells him everything about the night that his dad disappeared. Like, basically that she and him, we did it together.
Yeah.
We killed him together because I knew that you were unhappy and I knew you wanted me to. And he's like, fuck you.
Right.
You're an evil person. You killed him. And but again, the abilities are so downplayed. Like, this should be the type of thing where it's like, oh my God, tell me what else is going to happen. Oh, wow, you could see things. But it's like, you know, oh, I have supernatural ability. Ah, fuck you. Go to hell. You know, nobody seems to care enough about it.
Stephen King does stuff sometimes that drives me kind of crazy, like Dreamcatcher.
Yeah.
Okay?
And I assume you mean the book, not the movie?
I'm talking about the movie, actually.
Oh, he hated that. He hated the
book. Which is fine, but it's still... okay. I guess even in this book, the character done it.
Mm.
Okay? Through the whole thing, it's like Dreamcatcher I thought was really cool, and then at the end he turns into like a weird creature beast thing and...
Donnie Wahlberg.
But you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it was just... I was like, what the frig is this? Like, it didn't... Yeah. I don't know, and that's kind of almost what I felt like happened this episode.
Right.
With everything.
Yeah. King can do horror, but when he starts getting in, like, supernatural stuff, it tends to... Like, it's almost like he doesn't believe the stuff that he's writing himself.
Right, yeah.
Like, he tries to write it all off, you know? Same thing in, like, The Shining.
Yeah.
You know? Just downplay everything, write it off, make it more about this rather than the superpowers type of thing.
I think all my favorite stories of his are ones that are mostly, or not mostly, but there's no quote unquote supernatural element in them. Like It, I love It, and I understand that's got a tremendous amount of supernatural element.
I was wondering where you
but it's going. All horror. It's not. There's no light or this or that. I mean, you know, they all
none
flow.
Of the kids have a superpower.
Right. I mean, it's this killer that comes back every so many years and he has to kill so many kids and this and that or whatever. And it's violent. And yes, he is a supernatural killer, but it's not like the Dreamcatcher or it's not like The Shining at the end where like they're all tied to the stake and some weird, you know. And,
yeah.
The Langoliers was kind of cool. That concept as far as like they go through the Aurora Borealis and they end up in another time and the Langoliers are these little creatures that come and eat the past away.
Right.
That was kind of neat.
Yep.
You know, but like when he, like Dreamcatcher, like when he does things like that, you know, Cujo is excellent. Okay.
Christine.
Yeah, exactly. Carrie.
Yep.
That was excellent. That was really good. I really like Thinner. Like those type of horror elements with the gypsies or the telekinesis and stuff like that, I'm cool with. But
yeah, look at Carrie. She had the ability to move things with her mind, and immediately her mother beat her, told her she was the devil.
Right.
You know, she was completely
don't use this.
Right. She was like,
I feel like that's Stephen King's message about a lot of powers that people may have. Don't use it. It's bad.
But then there's other ends where he kind of just kind of goes way off the deep end for me. And I'm just like, this is not. And that's what I'm afraid just happened with this episode of Castle Rock. So,
well, they've already been renewed for a second season. So we'll see.
But it's an anthology show, so it'll be different shit.
Maybe.
Anyways, Sinner. Season one.
Yeah. So when last we checked in, you had seen the first episode.
And I've watched the remaining seven.
It's not that hard.
No, like, again.
It's a USA show, so they're 42 minutes.
42 minutes, yeah. When I watched the initial trailer of her killing the guy, I was like, and she doesn't know why. I was like, oh, it didn't really make me want to watch it. And I actually asked Rude if he'd watch it, and he said no, and he said the same thing.
Yep.
And then as I started watching it, it's just like, okay, so, like, they're really just kind of rolling the story out slowly to you. And, like, episode two is really slow. You know, she tells this lie about, well, we don't know it's a lie at the time, but she says that she met Frankie in 2012. He gave her a false name, drugged her up. They had sex. Essentially, it implies that he raped her.
Yeah.
She got pregnant, and so she tried to kill herself. And when she woke up, she wasn't pregnant anymore. And
it was a very elaborate lie.
It was a very elaborate lie.
And she told it with such, like, she wasn't stammering or anything. Yeah. She was just like, this is what happened. Ugh.
And then you watch Lie to Me, and you see she's not looking away or doing any of that.
Exactly.
Micro expressions.
Yep.
And then the song was playing in the background the whole time that was playing at the beach when she had her episode.
Right.
So they're like, oh my
very
God.
Very believable. You're like, okay, this is traumatic. And
right. And then also this episode, they find out that it's a lie.
Right.
So it's a lie.
Like, still not buying it.
He looks into it, and he can easily prove it's a lie.
Yep.
You know, Frankie's dad gives him an alibi that he's not even around. She was never admitted to a hospital for anything like that. And then she's like, oh, well, someone helped me. I mean, like, she told kind of more lies to cover that lie.
Yep.
And
but
then,
it was breaking down at that point.
Right. And then he played the song for her, and she snapped and attacked him. And you see, we discover later through his bruises that, like, she attacked him in the same way with which she was attacked. He said that she attacked Frankie.
Right.
And
so where she stabbed him was where she punched Bill Pullman.
Right. And we see that. And so then my mind's going to, oh, she's some sort of, and then we know, she, you know, oh, she's some sort of trained assassin.
Right.
Or, you know, like, there's something going on. So I kind of, like, it made me think all this stuff. Like, last week I mentioned to you about, I wonder if there's some sort of supernatural element because of how they tied the two seasons and what the
right.
kid did. I now realize that is not the case.
Nope.
And then, you know, in episode three, we find out that, oh, she's a heroin junkie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she became a crack whore. Like, she tells them this stuff.
So now you throw out all of her credibility because
right.
you're like, she's just trying to cover her ass because
exactly.
a drug deal went wrong.
Exactly. And then you see her arms finally, and she's got horrific track marks in her arms. I mean, like, excessively bad,
like,
on both
the
sides.
The makeup effects were really well done.
Yeah. And then, you know, but we do find out, oh, okay, again, and I'm going to talk about the backstories real quick. Bill Pullman's character, the detective there, his backstories with his wife, I could have done without completely.
Yeah, really didn't
with
build on his character.
I like Catherine Irby, but the whole him and her having a shaky relationship and going to group counseling and therapy, and then her deciding that she wasn't going to do this anymore and he needs to move out, that was spread over the 8 episodes. Not necessary. I thought
nope.
it was stupid.
I agree.
His relationship with his dominatrix, that was weird.
Really weird.
Yeah, that was
and
weird.
It was nice to see a dominatrix. It didn't have to be a dominatrix, but this was...
not stereotypical.
She was an overweight woman.
Yeah.
Like, she wasn't, like, morbidly obese, but she was an overweight,
no.
large woman.
She was a big gal who was not overly attractive.
No, not at all.
And
a lot of the people in this weren't overly attractive. Jessica Biel is a beautiful woman. In this, she looked like a crack whore.
Yeah, she did.
I did not find her attractive at all. I found her, like, emaciated and strung out, which... and kudos to them.
Yeah, that's what they're going for. But you're right. It was not your stereotypical leather-clad dominatrix.
Nope. No, this was just some trailer park woman who hurt him.
Oh, yeah.
She practically broke his arm.
Yeah. And he was in for it. But so anyways, those two backgrounds, the one with him and his wife, I really could have done without. I don't think it added anything to the story.
I don't either.
The one with him and the dominatrix was interesting enough. That was like, oh, okay, he's self-punishing for some reason.
Yeah.
Okay. So then in episode 3, we find out that she disappeared for 2 months in 2012 and that she was found in a rehab center. And then everything about her go, and so she believes she was a drug addict.
And because now you don't know if she's lying.
Right.
Or if she really doesn't remember any of this stuff.
And the thing is she was brought into the rehab center by somebody, but like, she had on new clothes and clean sweatpants, and she had a big gash on her head that had been stitched up. So it's not lining up that she just disappeared 2 months and someone found her and brought her in type of thing.
Right.
And then, you know, she even says to her, you know, I was a drug addict. I was basically a crack whore. I'd sleep for people for hits, this and that. Because that's what she thinks that she did. And then when he brings her a needle, a packet of sugar to be the drugs, a spoon, you know, everything, show me how you shoot up. And she can't do it because she doesn't know how.
Right.
So he's like, you don't even know how to do it. I don't believe you use drugs because no one starts in their arms. They do between their toes. They do, you know, here and there. They don't just start and so their arms look like that.
Right.
Finally, after three episodes, we find out that this design that she keeps seeing, this weird, intricate design that's kind of repeated, is wallpaper.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a design on the wallpaper that's like a square of 5 inch by 5 inch that's repeated on the entire wall, let's just say. And the ending comes with a masked guy who comes in the room, and this is the guy that held her for 2 months. And we don't know why still.
Right. At this point, I've been impressed that they've taken what could have been an episode of Law & Order SVU.
Yeah.
And stretched it out, but never made it feel like, oh, God,
yeah,
when are we finally going to find out? Because it feels like each episode, you're like, oh, now I know what happened. And yeah, then you go, no, I don't.
Right.
But I'm okay with that because now I kind of want to know. Now I know that this didn't happen, but then what made it this? Now, you mentioned backstories. Let's also not forget the backstory that's going on about her and her family.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's her, a big her, key.
Fucking abuse, and I mentioned it when you saw the first episode.
Yeah.
Her mother, who basically as a child told her one of her first things when her baby sister was born, you did this.
Yeah.
You sucked all the energy out of me, so I don't have any to give your sister, so that's why she's sick. And continues through the years, tormenting her every time yep. the sister gets sick, which she's a sickly child. She has right. many diseases. Every time she gets sick, she's like, it's your fault. It's your fault for eating chocolate.
Yeah. You ate chocolate and your sister got sick.
Yeah. God was praying you.
Yeah. Yep.
So she buries the chocolate in the backyard because her aunt is like, here, have some chocolate. You right. deserved it. You're a good kid. You know, be a kid once in a while. Don't just be like, you know, shut into the house like your mom wants you to. And she buries the chocolate because her mother tells her that's why she got her sister sick. And then later on, you see her
pissed off at her sister.
Out in the backyard, digs that chocolate up. Her sister's looking at her through the window and she's like, nom, 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 nom.
And she hopes she gets sicker. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the backstory with her parents is screwed up. Her mother's definitely an over-the-top Bible-thumping zealot.
Yeah.
Her father, for whatever the reason, is... I don't get him. He's having an affair with a neighbor, we find out in one of these episodes.
Yeah.
Because I don't... Yeah, this is all can be pulled out of context. It doesn't yeah. matter. But we find out he's having an affair with a neighbor, and... But yet, he stays with his wife, and maybe she knows, maybe she doesn't. But, like, he doesn't hit the kids.
Nope.
He doesn't abuse the kids.
Nope.
He doesn't stop his wife from doing what she's doing.
Nope.
He doesn't, you know, it's so he's just, it's kind of, he's kind of a weird character because I can't figure out, like, where he comes from personality-wise.
Kind of reminds me of Bill Pullman's character. You know, yep. he stays with his wife.
Yep.
There's no real reason to, yet he's got the mistress on the side.
The dominatrix mistress, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I never put that relation together, but I guess they are similar.
But, yeah, he was an odd character because, yeah, he never stood up. He never stopped anything, but he also wasn't like, I'm leaving you.
Yeah.
Just every, and it was like clockwork. Every night, the light went on. He'd go downstairs, go over there.
Yeah.
Brown.
Brown chicken, brown cow.
Yep.
Now, another backstory that we have going on, there's a character named JD.
I like that actor.
Yes.
I like that actor a lot.
Yep.
JD, and, I don't like.
No. And JD basically, well, okay. So. Her husband at the same time is dealing with all this shit because
the main character's husband.
Yes, the main character's husband because his family owns like a air conditioning installation unit. They're losing business because of her. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know if to believe her. He doesn't know not to believe her. You know, she's held all this stuff from him, but at the same time, you know,
it's his wife.
It's his wife.
And he genuinely cares about her.
Yeah. And he saw what happened, you know, like in the first episode, which I know we talked about this, but like when he's investigating people and you go back and she says, you know, Frankie, like he got there before she did. So it's not like he didn't see what she did.
Right.
He was just like, you know, he's not going to touch you again. Like everything she was saying didn't make any sense. And then the way she attacked the guy and the way the guy recognized her and almost kind of let her do what she was doing. I mean, like, and his friend saying that it's, he's being a bigger standby his woman husband than you would think anyone should be.
Yeah, especially as more and more details are coming out.
Right, because all the details that are coming out in these first few episodes very much are against her.
Yeah.
And she's lying about things.
And makes her look like a terrible mother-wife person.
Yeah, and then we have the other officer. There's another beat patrolman that knows him, and they may be dated in the past or whatever. And so he's kind of finding out information that his wife won't tell him from her. So, like, he hears about the story about, you know, that she told about meeting Frankie and getting raped and pregnated and losing the baby and on and on and on. And the truck that Frankie drove and this and that. And he's like, no, that wasn't Frankie. That was a guy named JD who owned that truck. And so now he's investigating JD on his own to find out what's going on.
But he steps over a line.
Oh, he steps over
based on
a couple of lines.
Yeah, well, based on the hint. Tips he gets from his friend, the beat cop,
right.
And then she gets fucked because, well, how did he get that info?
Well, actually, both of his characters just like, don't worry about it.
Right. Well, no, she said she's going to get fucked.
Oh, you know, yes.
Because, I mean, Bill Pullman's great and all, but there is a whole police department. So she's like,
correct.
I'm fucked. I'm in trouble.
Yeah, I could lose my job because of this, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And then, you know, but Bill Pullman's character's like,
yeah.
Sometimes you have to be careful who your friends are. This is all he says to her.
Yep.
Like, he doesn't give a shit for it.
Right.
So as far as you know, she's kind of good. But, you know, the husband's stepping over some lines.
Oh, yeah.
And he talks to JD, tries to buy drugs off him. He goes to his house, buys drugs off his girlfriend. I mean, tries to give the beat cop, the patrolman there, oh, here's the recording I made, and here's the drugs I bought. You can go at least arrest her, and on and on and on. And she's like, no, I can't. Like, this is all illegal and
right.
Just like all the bounds he stepped over, but for his wife.
Right.
For his wife.
Yeah.
And
which, like, some may call that noble. Some may say that that's brain damaged.
Right.
Like, why is this person so adamantly fighting for this person, this woman who's obviously, at the very least, mentally broken.
Yep.
At the worst, she's just evil.
Yes. Yeah, that's the thing. If, like, if you listen to everything they're accusing her of, she's a horrible person.
Oh, yeah.
But yet he's still kind of like, I don't know.
I'm going to fight for her.
My wife.
Yep.
So,
very unrealistic relationship.
Yes. Yeah. Episode 4 is all about hypnosis.
Yep.
She gets hypnotized to try and bring up some of these memories of things that she's seen flashes of. And so she's starting to see more. I actually didn't write a lot of notes about this. I just wrote hypnosis.
Yeah.
She's starting to see more. There's a girl named Maddie. That we've established. Maybe she was JD's girlfriend at one point in time. We find out that Jessica Biel's character dated JD for some time.
Yep.
We find out that she keeps having these flashes of they're in the water, they're in the woods. They keep going down this stairwell. She's always seeing Maddie through all these, this blonde-haired girl. And nobody knows where she is or what she's up to. And then while she's under hypnosis, all of a sudden she'll revert back to being a kid and a bus goes by.
Yep.
And it's like, what the frick is that? You know, and then so that's what this whole episode is her trying to unveil some more of the story. And we're getting bits and pieces of that. And we're getting more about JD and her husband, what we talked about previously and everything. And then we go into episode 5, and now the state police have stepped in.
Right.
And the reason why they've stepped in is because at the end of episode 4, Bill Pullman and his wife are going through a walk through this wooded area. Because he's discovered that, you know, JD siphoned a gallon of gas on those little cans. Those little emergency cans, allegedly. That's what she saw.
Yep.
So if you put it in that truck, it gets 14 miles to the gallon. The most they could have gone is in this square area. She's talking about in her memory flashes and her hypnosis, she sees a water tower.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to go for a walk in that area where this water tower is. That's in that 14 mile radius with his wife under the guise of we're going for a nice hike together.
Yep.
He sees the water tower. Then he sees something that makes him run off the trail. And we don't know what it is or understand it until we see it's a school bus. And then you put two and two together, the school bus she kept seeing, this is the school bus she was seeing.
Right.
And then he sees some mushrooms on the ground, which leads him to believe there's a dead body there, and sure as shit there is. So,
but his wife is not very happy.
She
about
is
this.
Not, and this is the catalyst for her to like say, "I'm done."
Right. She's basically like, "You said this was going to be a romantic walk in the woods. Yeah. We're trying to put things back together, and you were just following a lead."
Yeah.
You lured me up here, and I wanted him to be like, "Why can't it be both?"
Exactly.
You know,
I did some investigating. I found something out.
If nothing was here, we would have had a nice walk anyway.
Yeah. He's just, you know, two birds, one stone.
Yeah.
Multitasking.
Yeah.
We got to do that in life. But the state police step in.
Yeah.
Because, you know. Because
now there's a dead body.
Now there's, well, there's another dead body.
Right.
Why the fuck didn't they step in when Frankie was murdered?
Because they saw him get murdered. I mean, that's a pretty open and shut case. She confessed to it. There's a confession on the books.
I'm just saying.
There's nothing to investigate.
There's no reason for state police to step in at this time other than to create another antagonist character. That in the lead detective for the state police.
Technically speaking, if they don't have an ID on this body, then they have to start looking at it as, you know,
a Jane Doe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So immediately the state police are blaming, blaming her for this murder, for this dead person, because
she led them there.
She led them there. She must know how. Here, I have no, I don't know. I don't remember. I don't know. She has no memory of this. No, nothing.
But they know that she murdered someone else. In right. plain sight.
Exactly.
So they're like,
but she doesn't
looks
know
like
why.
A murderer and smells like a murderer.
Right. And she was driven to murder basically by a song playing.
Yeah.
So they find the body. It's Maddie.
This mystery girl.
Yeah, it's this mystery girl. That's, you know, like they're all convinced this is Maddie. This is the mystery girl. Okay, this is who it is.
Get any information from her now, which we were hoping to.
Right. Because
she could have filled in some of the blanks.
Exactly. And yeah, she could have filled in some breaks, but now she can't fill in any blanks at all.
Right.
And I can't remember if this is the episode or the next episode where maybe it's the next episode where JD is, his character is killed.
I think it's the next one.
I think it is too. But regardless, so the state police are investigating. They're blaming her. They're going. They're trying to find out more who this dead body is.
Yep.
And they can't. They don't know who it is. We don't find out until episode 8 who the dead body is.
Right.
They're going with this is must be Maddie because she's missing.
Which again, this show up until this point has been very good for this.
Yes.
Like I mentioned earlier, you know, you're like, oh. This is what is happening. This is the truth. This is what I'm believing. You never feel cheated. You're never like, oh, fuck you guys for pulling the rug out from under me.
Yep.
You're like, oh. It's almost like a show about perspective.
Yep.
And seeing the big picture. Because, you know, when you're looking at just the little details, kind of like when the state police come in, you just look at the basic details, you're like, this is an open and shut case.
Right.
But then when you start pulling it back and taking a bigger view of it, you go, oh, wow.
I mean, they're dropping breadcrumbs all over the place in this story, giving a little bit here and there and this and that. And you really do need to watch and pay attention to it.
Oh, yeah.
Because little things come back later on, you know? Like in episode 6, he gets permission because he blackmails the judge based on him pulling her over when she was drunk, when she was a young prosecutor and he was a beat patrolman.
Yeah.
And gets permission to take Kara to the private club. That we've discovered. Because when they dig up the body, they find adjoining that land where the body is this private club.
Yep.
And there's no way that Kara dragged this body at 110 pounds to where this is and dug this hole. And there's no roads close by to where this is. The closest place is this private club. And, of course, as soon as he starts going there, everyone starts squaring up, you know, and lawyering up or whatever.
Now, also, let's remember that – meanwhile, we've got the backstory going on.
Yeah.
We're learning more. Like, as the backstory is progressing, Kara's sister is getting older.
Yes.
Kara's sister is a little...
Yes.
She wants to be a slut, essentially.
Because episode 6 is where we get sisterly love.
Yes. But she basically, like, she encourages Kara to get out there and live her life vicariously. She's old enough now. She's a teenager. She knows she's never going to have a life outside this house. She knows that she's fucked.
Yeah.
And so... But she's the dirty one. Like, she's the perverted one. She's the one that's talking about...
She's the one that steals the magazine from the nurse's station, and it's got, like, sex quizzes in it.
Yeah.
It talks about orgasms, and then, you know, hides it, and then when their mother finds it, the sister automatically confesses, I read this magazine, and her sister's like, oh, I found it on the ground. I didn't know what it was about.
Right.
And it's just like, I read things about orgasms and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then her mother makes her kneel down on rice to pray in front of a Jesus statue.
Yep. And we've also, correct me if I'm wrong, by now we've heard through flashbacks and through talking that at some point, like, we're seeing her sister in all these flashbacks. Her sister's dead in the present time.
Yes. Like,
we know that her sister is gone. Her sister did not survive her diseases or whatever. We just know that she is gone, and Mom blames Kara for it.
In an interview with the police, the mother says that they lost their sister when Kara left, her sister died.
Yeah, so they
and
basically...
it's Kara's fault that she died because she wasn't here and on and on.
And so they don't want her back.
Right.
Like, they don't want to support her. They don't want her back because, as far as they're concerned, she killed her sister by walking away.
But we don't know. But we just assume because she's so sick.
Right.
Right.
I mean, she's got all these diseases. She's always been sick. She's always been teetering.
Yeah. I mean, we don't really ever see her well.
No.
It's just somehow she's lived to be 19 or 18, 19 and alive but horribly sick still.
Yeah.
And you're right. She's the one that is forcing Kara to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
And Kara's not comfortable to do.
She's being that dick friend that you had as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was Christian. The kid who was like, when that joke came around, you know, what's the capital of Thailand? Bangkok. And then you punch him in the balls. You know, he was the one who was like, you should do that on your dad. You should do that. And I was like, no, my dad's big. He'll kill me. No, it'll be fine. He likes jokes. He'll like it. And then, like, just as I went to do it, he goes, oh, maybe you shouldn't. Then I do it. I get my ass handed to me. Yeah. And Christian goes, boy, I guess you shouldn't have done that. Yeah. Basically, that's her sister.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that is.
Her sister is that dick kid.
That is a tremendous analogy. Yeah.
She's like, you should go out and get laid. You should go out and party. You should go out and do drugs and get drunk and do
and
all this stuff.
And then come tell me all about it.
Yeah.
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 Oh, see the neighbor boy across the street? He's cute. You should go blow him.
Yes. Yes.
And tell me about it.
Put your mouth on his penis.
And then tell me about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Kara's like, she's grown up.
Yeah.
Between mom and sister, always having to do what's right for sister so that she'll be healthy.
Constantly beating into her head, it's your fault your sister's sick, da 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 da, you have to do everything for your sister. And then her sister's like, oh, go do these horrible things and tell me about it. So she's literally in between a rock and a hard place where she doesn't know what she should or shouldn't be doing.
Yep.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks.
I mean, there are worse things. It could be that her sister's like, you know, go out and murder small animals. You know, that would suck. But in this case, it's almost worse because she's kind of making her into a fucked up person.
Yeah, and then like her sister comes back one night, and her sister's real sick at this point, and she's just like, you know, like show me how he kissed you because I'll never know. So show me how. And then so they end up kissing, and then the next thing you know, little sister's making big sister, you know, finger her.
Yeah,
and
yeah, she's like, show me how he touched you.
Yeah, because like this is the only way she's gonna feel something like this, and so you almost feel bad for little sister. But at the same time, yeah, little sister's a dick.
Yeah,
big time.
Yeah,
yeah. Phoebe is a wicked, wicked dick.
Yeah,
and this is more reason why Kara's so screwed up.
Yep.
And so these first,
she's had people manipulating her entire life.
The first six episodes is just build, breadcrumbs, breadcrumbs, all this other stuff's happening. You know, Kara's husband goes to confront JD because, you know, he makes comments during one of the interviews that he has no idea who Kara is. But at the same time, does your wife still like getting, you know, banged by two guys at once? And then why did you say that? Oh, just, I don't know, just to entice him. You know, because whatever, you know, I saw her on the news. It's the only way I know her. And then, of course, they find out later he's lying and he dated her and on and on and on. And then, you know, we get to this where the husband goes to confront her. He's going to kill him. Mm-hmm. He's got a gun with him.
Yep.
And he sees these two guys run out of the house and jump in a car and leave. And then he goes in and JD's dead on the floor. He's shot in the head.
Yep. Saved him the trouble.
Saved him the trouble. But at the same time, he brought so many unanswered questions with him to his grave.
Mm-hmm.
Period. And you know it's drug-related.
Just like that Maddie character.
Yep.
Out in the woods.
Yeah. Oh, but before... And the reason why he was going to go kill JD, and I forgot this, is because the police arrested JD's girlfriend. They raided the house. Yeah, they arrested his girlfriend, took the kid, you know, all the drugs and everything. JD wasn't there. And then JD went and attacked his father, Karis Husband's father, Karis' father-in-law, hit him in the ribs and then a head with a baseball bat, put him in the hospital in a coma.
Yep.
And then that's why he went to go kill him, finds him dead. So then all this is happening in these first six episodes. And they're laying out a tremendously broad story with all this little bit here and there and hypnosis and past regression and a horrible childhood and, you know, believing that you're a crack whore, but you don't even know how to use drugs and on and on and on, you know. And then we get episode seven. And episode seven is amazing. The whole thing is just one giant flashback.
Yep.
Because in episode...
Which normally you'd be like, okay, all shows do flashbacks.
No. This was the ultimate of all flashbacks. Episode six ends with... They're at the private club, and they went there, they left, and she's like, "This, maybe I missed something," so they go back. And then she finds this outbuilding, and she sees the stairwell, and she sees
flashbacks.
Yes, and she sees the lamp on the wall and everything, and whatnot. And then you see her collapse on the floor, and then we get episode seven, and it's the flashback. And I have a shit ton of notes about this.
Because this was basically where we finally got all the pieces put together in the correct order.
Like, Kara takes Phoebe out for a night. Because basically Kara's going to sneak out to go be with her boyfriend. Oh, also this other thing is they've been saving money for years to go run off to Florida together.
Kara and JD.
Kara and Phoebe.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And now Phoebe's realizing this never going to happen, is it?
Right.
And Kara's like, oh, don't worry about it, which is her way of basically saying, no, it's not.
Yeah.
So she basically blackmails Kara and says, I'm 19, it's my birthday, you need to take me out. She's got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Yeah. And I'm basically dying.
Yep.
You need to take me out. I want to be out of this house for one night, and I want to live.
Yep. And JD, on the other hand, is saying, well, you've got that money. Why don't we run away?
Yeah.
Leave your sister and your screwed-up family behind. Yep. Let's get out of here. His girlfriend's not keen on that idea. He's
a big piece of shit.
Oh, he's a complete piece of shit. His
girlfriend's
actor.
Maddie and is not keen on it. Yeah.
No. But he basically, the way this guy is, this piece of shit, is like, you're my girlfriend, but I'm going to fuck this other girl.
Right.
Just so you know.
And Maddie's such a drug addict. She's like, oh, okay. And she stays in the relationship.
Yeah.
And so they do drugs. Phoebe does drugs. Maddie does drugs. They end up at this private club. And who opens the door? Frankie.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, he was there the whole time. She wasn't lying. And then, like, Frankie and Phoebe are making eyes at each other. They head off together. JD brings Karen to meet Todd.
That was creepy, too, because...
They saw each other instantly.
Frankie and Phoebe, like, it wasn't just like he's like, I'm going to fuck this girl, and she's like, I need to get laid. It was like they actually started connecting, like, at a high school dance kind of thing.
Yes.
Like they were, like, joking and tee-heeing and getting a little closer. It was almost like the start of a little flirtatious romance rather than just what you would expect, you know.
Right.
It was just like, I'm going to fuck.
They had a good conversation.
Yeah.
They danced.
Yeah.
They fell in love, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decide they're going to, you know. But here's the thing. They're doing all this, and JD brings Kara down to meet Todd. This guy's a real scumbucket, big time.
Yep.
And Maddie comes in, and JD basically tells her to get lost, that he's sick of her.
Yeah.
And she has a massive breakdown.
Oh, yeah. And, well, all that fucking psychological shit up until this point, plus the drugs.
Yeah. And JD basically says, because she's like, I love you. You know, we're supposed to be together. You know, I've done things for you. And he says, you know, getting pregnant and jumping in front of a car doesn't make you better. So that's where she gets that story from, where she got pregnant and jumped in front of a car, and that's how she lost the baby. It was Maddie's story.
Yep.
So you're seeing all these things that she was saying earlier. There's truth to all of it. It's stories that she pulled from other people, and maybe she thought it was her memory, but it wasn't. Or she heard it somewhere, whatever it is. So
Until this point, that's what you're thinking.
And I'm like, oh, wow, okay, so that was a real thing that happened to this other girl.
So maybe it's just her splintered psyche was picking up on things.
So Kara leaves looking for Phoebe. And then she runs into some Mexican guy wearing the mask that we've seen her see so many times.
Yep.
And he pulls it off and laughs, and she's like, oh. So then Kara finds Phoebe and Frankie dancing. Kara wants to go, but Phoebe doesn't want to go back home. She's like, I'm never going back home. And then JD shows up.
There was also, before they got to the club, they had that point where they had run out of gas.
Yes, he siphons the gas. Yeah. So we can see that.
And then Phoebe runs down into the stream.
Yes.
And
oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. I forgot that part, yes. I guess. Or maybe, I don't know if I did that out of order, because it was before they went to the Beverly Club, or not Beverly, but Beaverton or Breaverton, whatever it is. Right. But you're right. Basically, all these flashbacks where Kara is seeing Maddie, it's actually Phoebe that are in these.
Yeah.
So she's seeing Maddie.
And the dripping wet girl on the edge of the pond that she's trying to pull out, that was actually her sister, not Maddie.
And when Maddie says, you're just trying to get rid of me so you can have sex with him and run away with him, that's not Maddie saying it. It's Phoebe saying it to her.
And when she ran away down there to the water, Kara actually debated leaving her.
Yes.
Because basically, JD, that's when he was like, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Let's just leave her.
They were going
She's dead anyway.
They were going to the private club, and Maddie peed herself.
Yeah.
And so Phoebe. So Kara makes him pull over so they can go down and wash her up in the stream. And you're right. It's almost like she's going to just leave her there at one point.
You really think it?
Yeah, I thought she was. And then she doesn't.
Nope.
But like all those things you see in a flashback, it's Maddie. And now you're seeing that it's Phoebe. Yeah. So fast forward back now, we're at the club. Kara finds him dancing. Kara's like, I want to leave. Phoebe's like, no, I don't want to leave. I'm never going back to that house. And basically she says to her, little sister's in for a good time. And she manipulates her big sister into doing a lot of drugs to do this good time. Like, at first she says, thank you so much, but you need to go live your life. I know you did all this stuff for me so I could live, yada, yada. But now we're going to go downstairs and listen to Frankie's music. And now we see the infamous stairwell and the chandelier lamp, whatever it is, on the wall at the beginning. And then they go downstairs. And now she manipulates her again into snorting a bunch of cocaine or whatever.
Because, again, Kara has no will when it comes to her sister. Nope. Her sister's like, do it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
And then her and Frankie start having sex Frankie and Phoebe start having sex on the couch. And then a drugged up Kara starts getting tag teamed by JD and Todd going in the back. Oh, she likes two guys banging her at once. Because we see Todd there, and this was for a USA show. There was a lot of graphic sex in this.
Yeah.
There was no nudity.
No.
But like he is just going to town around her from behind.
Yep.
And JD's right there doing stuff as well, and she's all drugged up and getting tag teamed by these guys, like I said. And then she kind of looks up and she sees Frankie doing CPR on Phoebe, which, by the way, wasn't going to work because she was not on a hard flat surface. She was laying on a couch.
Exactly.
And when you're doing chest compressions on someone on a couch, the couch gives with your compression, so you're not actually compressing anything.
Right. You're just pushing them up and down like you would do to a small child to make them laugh.
But much of the time in these episodes, we see this moment where you see someone step on like a sternum and you hear a crack.
Yes.
And then Kara wakes up like someone had broken her sternum, but wakes up gasping for air. And you see that under as Kara being done. You see it to happening to Maddie in her visions. But realistically, it's the sound of Phoebe's sternum being cracked as Frankie's doing chest compressions on her.
Because Frankie is pre-med.
Yes.
So he knows this stuff, which he should have known to get
her on a flat surface. Exactly. But Kara jumps up and attacks Frankie, and then you see her going at pulling him off, screaming the same thing she screamed in the first episode, I'm not going to let you hurt her, stop hurting her. And then you see her start punching him, and it flashes again to the first episode, and she's punching him in the same spots that she was stabbing him. And that was kind of cool how they melded that together.
Yep.
And then JD tries to pull her off, and she, like, scratches JD, and then he bashes her head with a glass ashtray, and she's gone.
Oh, yeah, she's out.
And, and basically that's kind of the end of the episode.
So we finally know everything that happened.
Yeah, we learned a whole lot in this flashback.
But then you think to yourself, well, wait, we learned everything that happened, but there's still one more episode.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just to tie up loose ends.
Nope. A lot to do in this episode.
Yeah.
Because episode 8 opens with her in the private club, like on her knees, looking at the stairwell. And now you've just realized she's just told her tale of everything that's happened. The state police show up and they are handcuffing her and hauling her away. And even the state police detective in charge is like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And the thing is, though, with episode 8, we learn that Todd, he's dead. Like right away, they're like, well, Todd's dead.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
He's not a suspect anymore.
I see why they only introduced him in the 7th episode now.
Yeah. Todd's dead.
JD's been
and has
dead.
An alibi. He was gone during her disappearance. Because yep. now they're like, well, where'd she go for these 2 months? What happened?
Right.
JD's dead. Yep. Frankie is dead, obviously. We learn that Maddie is missing because this is the episode we learn that the body in the ground is Phoebe. And the reason why, but because we also learned in another episode that there was blood traces found on the carpet or the blanket that the body was wrapped in, and it was Kara's blood.
Right. So they thought she had to do with that. That was another reason why. Genetically, it was her sister.
And now we're finding out, oh, no, it was Phoebe. And then we have this moment where we find out that Mom never called the police to report them missing because she just assumed they ran away.
Yep.
She knew about their plans to go to Florida. So when they didn't come, when she found them both gone and they didn't come back, she just assumed they ran away. So in her mind, they were both dead. And then when Kara comes back and Phoebe doesn't, well, then obviously Phoebe's dead and it's your fault.
Yep.
And that was it. They never filed a police report. They didn't do anything. Not even Dad. Like, that was enough for them.
Yeah. How fucked up is that?
Massive. Oh, dude, everything she did was fucked up. And Dad was just like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a messed up family. Head to toe. Yeah. Like the entire family. Dad was the most normal one because he was literally just keeping food on the table and fucking the neighbor.
Yeah. And then we find out that the masked guy that kept drugging her, that's who now she got all these track marks on her arm. He was just pumping drugs into her to make her forget what was going on. And she did. And then because she had already pleaded guilty, she couldn't change her plea now.
Right.
And based on evidence at hand and everything, even with all the stuff we discovered from the past, at the end of the day, she still murdered this guy in cold blood.
And not only did she murder this guy, but like, even though she's now said, oh, I'm telling you this tale, and they go, wow, it all makes sense. But you know what?
Yeah.
Your other tales also made sense.
Right.
So how can we trust you with this?
And everyone's dead that can confirm any of this that happened, basically, or missing. She gets 30 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is a 42-minute episode, so like that, all that happened really quickly at the beginning.
Yep.
And then we have like a passage of time sequence where you know some time has passed. We don't know how long, but there's been some time passage. And then I still don't know how this happened. And I went back and rewatched it, but all of a sudden, Detective Ambrose, Bill Pullman's character, finds Maddie just like that.
Yeah.
Oh, there was only one other kid named Winter in the registry. So how the fuck do you know
he
kid
basically
named Winter?
She had changed her last name.
Yeah.
But he knew that she would have changed it to that or something like, or like she was going by he did it by the kid's name, which was really fucked up.
Yeah. Didn't make it. Well, maybe because there's this one thing where the word Winter is written on the wall, and maybe he was at where Maddie's house was, and there was a nursery or some shit, and it said Winter. She thought, oh, maybe the kid's name is Winter, and then...
Well, remember Maddie also had that story about getting pregnant and throwing herself in front of a vehicle?
Right.
But...
I don't know.
Obviously, she still had the kid.
Well...
Because it's JD's kid.
But the kid... No, the kid wasn't that old. He wasn't 5 years old. The kid was only a couple years old. So it didn't make any sense. But he found Maddie like that. And Maddie doesn't really confirm anything to him other than say that.
But she's basically like, all right, you found me.
Yeah, you found me. Good job. JD was an abusive prick. I was a stupid idiot.
And then he's like, JD's dead. Oh, okay. So I don't have to hide so much now.
Yeah, he's dead. Oh, cool. Great. Thanks.
Because
yeah,
she basically fled to get away from JD.
Yeah. And then somehow. Oh, and by the way, they pulled down some wood paneling in the Beaverton private club, like the wall downstairs, and there's no wallpaper there. Right. So this mysterious wallpaper she's seeing, the room she was held in, wasn't there.
But there's also a panel that's missing. Like, it was something weird. Like, either they had put up paneling over the old paneling, or like they discovered that there was like one chunk of wall that was missing from downstairs.
I don't know about that
one. Yeah,
I know they took away a part of the paneling, and you see the wood framing and then the bricks behind it.
Because basically what happened was the wall had his blood and DNA, or maybe it was Phoebe's blood and DNA.
Oh, from getting hit maybe?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, and they took it out.
So they took out the entire chunk of wall.
Yeah.
And then had it redone with drywall or whatever. So that was missing, and they were like, well, wait a minute. There's a missing, like, this part of the wall has been redone.
Yeah.
Because then that's what they find. They find the missing piece of wall that was kept at the guy's house. Like, he kept the whole panel of wall. And I'm not talking, like, oh, a 3x3 square.
Yeah.
I'm talking a floor-to-ceiling, 4-foot wide, 6-foot wide, whatever, chunk of wall.
But I can't remember why he went to look there to begin with, but brought him to go look for it.
Because part of her story involved, I think it was Phoebe, and again, it's been a couple of weeks since I watched this.
Yeah.
I think it was Phoebe getting slammed against the wall, or somebody getting slammed against the wall. Maybe it was her getting slammed against the wall when she went nuts on him, and JD was like, no, get off. Somebody got slammed against the wall, and there should have been a hole there, and there should have been blood and DNA.
No. Right, but no, what I mean is, like, okay, so, spoiler. We find out that Frankie called his dad.
I love how you say spoiler. Like,
the
we
whole
just...
thing has been a spoiler.
Yeah.
We find out that Frankie's called his dad.
He's a member of the club.
Right. Dad, you got to help me. Something's wrong, you know, and dad wakes up and goes. But Bill Pullman getting to dad, I can't remember the segue. Like, what was it he discovered? Or what was it made him look into it? That's what was confusing. I remember now.
Okay.
So, JD's pills. That's right. JD's pill business and all these doctors that were defrauded for it. He was looking into that and all came back to Frankie's dad.
Yep.
So then he looked into Frankie's dad and found everything. And basically he brings Kara to Frankie's parents' house.
Yep.
And she goes upstairs and she finds the wallpaper.
Yep.
And we see it's in an upstairs bedroom at their home. And then we flash back to Frankie's dad goes, tells Frankie to go home. He's going to cover this up. And JD go bury Phoebe in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you see Maddie's kind of half awake, but she's barely got a concussion and some brain damage and whatever. And she sees the bus and she sees the water tower. And then she's trying to crawl away. And then he's going to bash her head in with the shovel, but he can't. Yes, Kara is seeing all this stuff. And then Frankie's dad's going to bash her head in with the shovel, but he can't. So Sadie brings her back to their house, keeps her prisoner for 2 months and drugs her every day, repeatedly wearing that mask. And sends his kid away, sets up the fake alibi that he was across the country that we heard about earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and ultimately, through all of this, they were listening to Frankie's music, and when she saw her sister, you know, die and Frankie doing the CPR, that song was playing.
Yep.
So that really did trigger her.
Yep.
And we find out that, you know, that he covered it up, he stitched up her head, and then JD started blackmailing him to get pills for his business. And that's what it was when Maddie told him about JD's pill business. Because, oh, he called me like 5 years ago to say he had a new pill. But wait a second. He didn't deal drugs before?
Right.
Before, you know.
But now suddenly he had a source.
Right. Before all this happened, he wasn't a drug dealer. No, he wasn't a drug dealer until after all that happened.
Yeah. Because now he had a source.
He had a source. And that's how he tracked it down. And, you know, Kara confronts him and just says, like, how could you basically, like, I know what you did.
Yep. And apparently, it must be like the years of this secret bearing on him. Plus, his kid's dead.
Yeah, his kid was just murdered, and he knows it's his fault, essentially.
Yeah.
And he knows more than he's letting on, and he just breaks down and starts bawling.
Yep.
And says, forgive me, and she just turns and walks away.
Yep.
And so now the judge is like, well, considering all these extenuating circumstances, and reduces her murder conviction down to manslaughter.
Yep.
And, you know, that's why when Frankie saw
her. Did she give her like 2 or 3 years or something?
No, sent her to a psychiatric facility.
That's right.
And every 2 years to be reviewed for be released.
Yep.
You know, after 2 years, we'll review you to see if you should be released or not.
But don't worry. You know, dad keeps bringing the kid to visit her because, you know, that's healthy for
standing by her.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was a great story.
Yeah, it really was.
It was a great story. A lot of loopholes, a lot of this, a lot of that, a lot of, you know, feeding you these breadcrumbs and this. And that was way better than I thought it was going to be.
Yep.
And for
like
me,
I said, I watched the first episode, same thing. I was like, eh, whatever. But then I just got hooked.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to see how it unraveled because each episode they make you think you know what's going on, but then they're like, no, you really don't.
You don't know what's going on. It was good. I really enjoyed it.
Yep.
I'm glad you watched it and gave it a push.
Yeah. It's a good show. I mean, granted, anybody who's listened now has seen the whole first season, essentially. It's still worth a watch.
Yeah.
Because the tone of it is so dark. Like, this was one of the darkest shows I've seen in a long time.
It was really dark and depressing at times and everything, especially what was going on with her.
Yeah.
That kind of rolls us into season 2.
Yeah.
Do we want to save it? Talk about it next week? We just talked a lot about season 1.
It's true.
We want to give people a chance to watch it?
Yeah.
I will say this. You talked last week about the kid.
The basic premise.
The basic premise. The kid drugging his parents and they found out it was this plant, and the kid knows because the plant gives you a rash and this and that.
Yep.
And it was gypsum weed.
Yep.
Okay. So back, it's 2018, 2012, back in 2010, I want to say,
mm-hmm.
the city of Augusta planted a tremendous number of gypsum weed at Coney Circle and Memorial Circle. Okay. They didn't know what it was. It was just a pretty flower. So we start getting all these overdose reports of people. No one died. Okay, one person died. But we get all these overdose reports, and it's can't figure out what it is that they took. And it's, you know, it's not any like anything. It's like they walk in, there's no needle in their hand. There's no drugs all over the place, you know. Can't figure out what it is. And finally, one of the people tells one of our officers, it's a tea that we make from the gypsum weed that they're growing in the circle that we make, you know, we take the leaves, we make a tea with it, and you drink this tea. And if you only use so much, it doesn't kill you. It's a hallucinogen. But people are overdosing on it.
Right.
If you do a lot, so we find that out. And of course we're dying laughing. Oh my God, the city's supplying drugs for, and kudos to the residents that figured this out, because there's nothing more resourceful than a drug addict sometimes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, of course, then the next day, like, the arborist is sent out, and they pull all these plants and all on and on and on. It was hilarious.
Wow.
Hilarious.
Huh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the second season of Sinner, 3 episodes so far. The third one just aired last night.
Oh, so I've only watched the first two then.
As have I.
Watched the third one.
Yeah. So by the time we come back next week, we'll have 3 episodes to talk about.
Yeah. I think that's good. Yeah. Great. And again, all season one is on Netflix.
Yep. And season 2 is on USA right now. So yep. If you have the USA app or something like that, you can probably get it.
Yep. So Mom and Dad.
So let me give you the setup here. Basically, I remember seeing the previews for this movie.
I think I remember too. Yeah.
Like last summer.
Yep.
And I saw that it was Nicolas Cage, Selma Blair, and it had something to do with parents going nuts and, like, going on murderous rampages. And I was like, that sounds kind of cool. I'd see that. But it kind of slipped through. I never bothered to go to the theater to see it.
Right.
And I never noticed it come out anywhere.
Neither did I.
So the other day I flicked on Hulu, and I see under movies, Mom and Dad. And I'm like, that sounds familiar. And I looked, and I go, oh, yeah, I wanted to check this out. Within the first, I'd say, 5 minutes, the introduction scene
yeah.
with the train tracks.
Yes.
I went, this really reminds me of like a throwback to the old 80s horror movies.
Yep.
Like this really feels like an old 80s horror. And then I watched what happened as a result of that, and I went, huh. Within about another 15 minutes, I went, and I got on my phone and I sent Mike a message, and I was like, you need to watch this. I didn't give him anything. I just said, you need to watch Mom and Dad on Hulu so that we could talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
I didn't say it's a great movie. I didn't say I didn't say anything. Just, you need to watch this, because it definitely deserved to just be like, I'm going to go into this fresh.
So the opening credits, to me, it was screaming, like, I'm like, this is like an 80s homage or something.
It was.
Horror. Like, it really was. The
like
theme,
John Carpenter could have done this.
Right. The theme. The montage for the opening credits. I mean, everything is screamed 80s horror flick.
Yeah.
Type, you know, homage or something. I'm like, this is pretty awesome. Okay. And then you're right. The train track scene.
Yes.
Really.
Basically, we get a camera view
yeah.
from the passenger seat of an SUV type thing. There's a woman who's driving. She stops, parks her vehicle, adjusts herself a little bit, reaches over. You realize, oh, in the passenger seat is a car seat. And she's adjusting a little baby's
yeah.
blanket in there. She drops the blanket like she's done adjusting the baby, gets out of the vehicle. And you're like, oh, she's going to go pick it up. No. Now we pan out.
Yeah.
We see that she parked in the middle of a railroad track as the Ballyards are coming down.
Yeah.
And the train is coming right towards the vehicle. And she just casually walks off, never gets the baby.
No.
And it cuts off just as the train hits the vehicle.
Yeah.
But you're like, this woman just, they just showed me the murder of a baby.
Yeah.
In the first 5 minutes of this movie.
Yep. And then we learn about some characters, and we learn about Nicolas Cage's dad and
yeah.
Selma Blair's mom. And,
oh, they're great
parents.
And they
have two kids, like a 14-year-old or 15-year-old girl who's a piece of shit.
Oh, yeah. and steals money
and a whining, obnoxious 9-year old.
A 9-year old.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, they typecast these kids as kids.
Right, basically. And they go to school, and some weird shit's happening at school where parents are suddenly coming to pick up their kids.
Yeah.
And then there's all these parents, and then, like, for some reason, they're lined at the fences, and they can't get into the school because it's a private school, so they can't.
And the one security guard's out there, like, yeah, telling them, like, you can't come in.
You guys go to school's not over. And the teacher's like, what's going on? And there's this one teacher, like, their math or history teacher, whatever it is, he's like, why isn't anyone telling these kids what's happening?
Right.
It's like he somehow knew it was happening, but no one else did. And then for whatever reason, one kid's like, screw it, I'm out of here, because their parents are yelling for them. And the kid's like, something's wrong. So he runs and he climbs over the fence, and his mom grabs, and like the security guard grabs the kid, and they're trying to keep the kid on this side, and mom's trying to pull the kid over the other side. Finally, she gets the kid on the other side, and she freaking stabs him to death.
Yeah. Like, brutally.
Yeah. And then the rest of the parents are like, screw this! And they storm the gate and start chasing down their kids. But they're only going after their own kids.
That was the coolest part about this. Yeah. Like, every other horror movie that you see, like zombies or Children of the Corn or anything like that, they kill everything. The specific thing in this movie is that parents want to kill their own children.
Yes.
Otherwise, they're just normal people.
Yeah.
They can carry on conversations. They're intelligent. They're not like berserker raging.
Like, they could be murdering their child and looking at other people going, how's it going today?
Yeah.
How you doing?
And then once they're done murdering their child, they just walk off like nothing happened.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
And the thing is, we don't know what's causing this.
And we never do.
We never find out. That's
which
the other thing,
which
too.
Which is great. Again, because, 80s horror movie.
And then, like, finally, when Nick Cage and Selma Blair become affected by this, it's amazing. It's the most Nick Cage we've ever seen.
Yes.
He's trying to kill his kids.
Yeah. Now,
I don't want to give away too much because I think people need to watch this.
I will say this, okay? Where we talked about the murder of the baby in the beginning.
Yeah.
There's another scene involving a newborn.
Literally a newborn, fresh out of the womb.
If you're one of these people who has any, like, qualms about seeing small children hurt, stay away from this movie.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything more than that, but literally, like, I don't care about kids, and even I had a hard time
watching. I squirmed a lot watching that.
I'm like, oh my God.
I actually am going to say the baby doesn't get killed.
Right.
But it squirmed a lot.
It's really uncomfortable.
There was another scene in the movie that really made me squirm, and it was when the daughter's sticking her finger through the hole in the door.
Oh, geez.
And you see mom on the other side with a knife, and she's going to stab.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing kind of took me out of it, which was when the daughter first ran down into the basement and she saw the destroyed pool table, which she didn't know what it was at first.
Right.
And then we get this extended flashback
of him ordering this pool table.
And then
I loved it.
And then building the pool table, like, from scratch, like laying the slate, putting the felt down, like building it all. Somehow manages to get the whole thing done without his wife ever noticing. And then she comes down. She's like, oh, you did this? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, well, I just think we could have spent the money on something, you know, blah, blah. And she's basically giving him credit. She's not even, like, yelling at him. She's just, like, being snide about it.
Yeah.
And then he goes Nick Cage on the pool table.
I like the 10 minutes they spent him trying to level it, and it won't level. Okay.
Like he puts so much into this.
Yes.
Making it so perfect.
Yeah.
And then she comes down and gives him just the right amount of shit. This was not, like, weeks worth of shit.
No.
Like, it's the first time she's seen this thing.
Yeah.
And he goes Nick Cage on that pool table with a sledgehammer.
Massively. Yeah.
It was a little bit weird because it was a flashback in the middle of such an action.
And it had nothing to do with what was going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I gotta say though, like, seeing the kids at that school, seeing those teenage fucktards.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what snapped in all the parents. Like, it was some kind of collective, like, this generation's lost. But yeah, this was an enjoyable horror movie.
It was. And they're trying to kill their kids any way they can.
Yep.
And
they get creative sometimes.
They do get creative. There's a little Home Alone-ish element at one point.
Yep.
And then they're all of a sudden there's a ring at a door, a knock at the door, or whatever it is. And it's Nick Cage's parents.
Yep, because this was a flashback. Not a flashback, but back at the beginning, they were talking about how Grandma and Grandpa were coming over for dinner.
Exactly. Oh, they're here now. This is so inconvenient. He goes, hey, Mom, now's not a good time, da-da-da. And then Dad tries to stab him. And so, like,
you're like, oh, it's generational.
Yeah. And it's Lance Hendrickson is Nick Cage's dad, and he's trying to kill him. And then we get a whole hilarious scene with his parents trying to kill him. Only him, though. Exactly. Not his wife. Right. Not the grandkids. Oh, and they see the grandkids. Oh, hey, kids, how's it going? I gotta go. Gotta go kill your dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, meanwhile, like, when all three generations are together, you've got Nick Cage and Selma Blair trying to kill their kids.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Grandpa and Grandma are trying to kill Nick Cage. Like, again, they never explain it. They don't have to.
They don't. The movie ends so ominously as far as, like, you don't really know what happens.
Yeah.
You don't know why it happened. You don't know if it stops happening. Yep. You see Mom almost come out of it at one point, but then gets right back into the rage of things.
I thought she was going to be immune. When we first met her, like, what, when she was in the hospital,
yeah.
I thought she was going to be immune to all this. I thought she was going to be the one who was, like, logical through all of this. But nope. This was a popcorn movie. This was
And it's less than an hour and a half long.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 93 minutes. I don't know. But it's like an hour and a half, which is an excellent time for a movie like this. And that whole flashback of him on the pool table is so nonsensical.
Exactly.
But it's brilliantly done.
It takes
done.
You right out of it. Yeah. But afterwards, you're like, I'm so glad they put that in.
Yeah, it's brilliantly done. It's just, but it's a great flick.
It is.
I give it a hard sell.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you want a good, ridiculous, over-the-top horror movie that you don't have to think for.
Yeah.
Definitely check this out.
It's definitely worth it.
Yeah.
I only watched one other thing. Did you watch anything else?
Nope. Just trailers and
news. I don't have any trailers and news.
Okay.
I watched a documentary last night on Amazon Prime. And it's called VHS Revolution. It's only 54 minutes long. Okay. Basically, it's about this guy who just... It's just a documentary on the creation of, like, a VHS tape and how it rose and everything. And it's a foreign guy that does the film, but he interviews a bunch of these two guys in the States. And so there's these two guys who bought Betamax machines back in 1976. And they show these old original Betamax machines where it wasn't just like a VCR like you think of. Something like the original ones had, like, a TV built into it. Like, but it's a whole, like, piece of furniture. Not like a console TV, even bigger. So anyways, these guys...
Actually, my dad originally wanted a Betamax, and my mom talked him into VHS.
Oh, that's funny.
Yep.
I only ever had VHS.
Yeah.
So they talked to these two guys, and they bought Betamaxes back in 1976. And one of the guys goes, he loved having control over the tyranny of the television listings, because he could record things whenever he wanted, and then watch it later.
Right.
Which is a DVR, which is, I mean, like, nowadays, but still, like, back in 1976, it was tremendous.
Isn't it interesting that DVDs skipped that?
Yeah.
Like, that was one of the big things. You had to keep a VCR to record TV shows.
Because DVDs, you couldn't, recordable DVD, you couldn't record TV to DVD. The technology wasn't there.
Right.
And then we have DVRs.
Because you couldn't record fast enough.
Right, yeah. And actually, DVRs have actually done away with the home video aspect of it, because with DVRs, you still can't record it to home video.
Right.
You can only save it digitally on your thing. I know some people probably figured out how to way to do it, yada, 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 but it's not as convenient as a VHS was, which must make... Well, we'll get into that debate a little bit later. So anyways, I like this one guy that says, and I didn't look up to see when this was released, but it was definitely in the last couple of years.
Okay.
Because they mentioned 2016 in it and everything. And this one guy goes, he has a collection of over 10,000 Betamax tapes.
Dude.
He has stuff recorded on.
This is Betamax, though. You said that this was about VHS.
It's called VHS Revolution, but they do talk a lot about Betamax.
Okay.
And this guy is a pure Betamax guy. He never switched to VHS.
Okay.
Or apparently DVD or DVR, it looks like, from the looks of things. Anyways, he goes, I got plenty of blank Betamax tapes. I know they stopped making them, but don't worry. I'm never going to run out. And, like, in behind him is just the whole wall, floor to ceiling, and it's just nothing but Betamax tapes. And it's all his home video collection. It's all stuff he's recorded off TV since 1976 when he first got one. So it's kind of hilarious that way. This same guy, he's got this t-shirt on that says, I look better on videotape. And this 2015 or 16 when they interviewed him. And then it cuts to 1979. And he's wearing the shirt there, but it's a different one, but it says the same thing. It's like it's got like a TV screen that says, I look better on videotape, except it's different colors, this and that. And he's there at the VHS convention. February 5th, 1979. They had conventions about it. All these people would come to these conventions bring their tape collections and tape trade stuff, because this is how people watch the movies, and this is how people, oh, I missed these episodes of this or that, and they would dub this stuff there. I mean, like, it was this huge thing. And these two guys met at a convention, and they would trade tapes, and this guy would make a new, had a newsletter printed up, and he still had a copy of it, showing all the stuff that he had recorded, all the movies, all the TV shows, and this and that, so they could do this tape trading with each other. I mean, like, and this is in the late 70s, early 80s, and it's like, never knew something like that existed.
Right.
Right. Then they go into talking about how Universal sued Sony over copyright issues, and how this case lasted for 10 years. And then by the time the Supreme Court rolled on it, like 20 million people had VCRs. When at the time when this suit started, maybe 20 people had VCRs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the Supreme Court said it was okay to record television in your home. So then they talk about, they talk about video stores, the rise and fall of video stores. They talk about how really porno tapes kind of started it all, as far as like the drive for a lot of people for home video, because now you didn't have to have a converted channel. You didn't have to go to an adult theater. You could bring it home in the privacy of your home and watch your smut and everything.
Except that you still had to go to the video rental store and, you know, stand in front of the person.
Well, no, they talked about going to the porn room and how it had the saloon doors, but no one can think of the name saloon doors. It's hilarious. They cut to all these different people interviewing, and they're waving their hands back and forth. You know, these doors like this, like it's a Western. They talk about tapes that were then specifically made for home video to be rewatched repeated, like Jane Fonda's Workout was the first one that sold, you know, a million copies or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Or how-to tapes. And then they talked about this tape called Rent-A-Friend. And it's this 45-minute tape where this guy's sitting there, and it comes on. He's kind of like dancing to this music, and he turns it down, and he goes like, hey, how's it going? What's your name? And then he waits kind of like Mickey Mouse Clubhouse for you to answer, and he goes, wow, that is your name. That's a great name. And this,
I'm going to call you pal.
He was your friend. You rented a friend, and you'd have conversations with him because he would talk to you and then wait. And it was I never heard of this. It was hilarious. It was so, and it's all 80s cheese, of course. And then they talk about, like, you know, Faces of Death and the UK nasty, the video nasties in the UK. And then they talk about piracy in communist countries and everything. And then they really gloss over the downfall of VHS, which was surprising to me. They just talk about its rise, and then that's gone. They don't really talk about, you know, they mention in kind of passing, well, you know, between DVD and Blu-ray and digital, and it doesn't, you know, it basically went away. But it was cool how they talked about, like, Blockbuster Video, and they talked to guys that own video stores or still do, or they talk about the greatness of going to the video store and spending an excessive amount of time picking up movies and how you interacted with people. This one goes, yeah, Netflix is great because it says, oh, because you like this, you may like this. But it's a lot different when you're standing in the video store and some guy just says, ah, that's a pretty good movie, or, oh, that's crap. They talked about glitter box covers. You know, the cover box has got to catch your eye. And so, I mean, I loved it. It was only 54 minutes long. It's definitely worth your hour. It was great.
Nice. I just remembered, as you were saying that, you were talking about the past and documentaries and stuff. I remembered I saw another movie this week.
Oh.
I completely forgot. And I'm really kind of – I feel like an asshole for that. Because I went to the theater.
Oh.
I actually went to Railroad Square Cinema.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I watched Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, when'd you do that?
Sunday.
Oh.
Yeah.
That would have been fun to go see.
Yeah. Tully had reached out to me, and we had talked about, like, having some lunch and getting together. And he's like, he basically, his words to me were, would you make fun of me if I said I wanted to see the Mr. Rogers movie? And I was like, fuck no. Rogers was my neighbor growing up.
Right.
So I watched the one on PBS that was hosted by Michael Keaton and mostly had a lot of their clips.
That was decent.
Yep. This one is a completely different one. This one is a documentary, but aside from a few off-screen, like little mumbles.
Yeah.
And you'll see it subtitled at the bottom. You don't see the guy who did this. Like, he doesn't introduce himself.
Right.
He's not like, I'm doing this documentary.
Right.
You don't even realize it's him. The people that you see on the screen are his two sons, his wife, and then people who were involved in the show, including Yo-Yo Ma.
Oh, yeah, because I remember they did an episode.
Yep.
Mr. McFeely was on it?
Mr. McFeely was on it. And I'm struggling right now. The black cop that they had on there.
Yep, yep.
We learned a lot going through. One of the coolest things for me was they started right at the very beginning, and they had a lot of footage from back in the day. They had a lot of footage of interviews with Fred Rogers that were done that they would kind of splice in, but
yep.
They didn't, like, the narrators were the people that they were interviewing. You know, like a lot of times with documentary, they'll say, you know, and then in the fall of 19... No, this was all the people who were part of it were telling this story.
Right.
Which was nice.
Yeah.
But basically, it started off in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in like 1955. And Fred Rogers was just back from getting ready to be done with seminary school. He was going to be an ordained minister. And he came home to visit his family and saw TV for the first time and went, I could do that. And they were like, what do you mean you could do that? He goes, I could do that. So he abandoned seminary school and went down to the local TV station. And he was like, why don't they have any programs for kids? And they were like, I don't know, who wants to do that? So he said, I'll do it. He was not the star. He sat backstage off screen and played the piano and played the music and came up with ideas for it. But they had a woman, Joyce, who would sit there in front of the camera and she would talk to the kids and they got free movies, you know, just educational films and stuff like that. And he basically said, he was like, the problem with free movies is that they're brittle.
Yeah.
They're cheap and they'll break in the middle of a movie. He goes, but if you're on live TV, you got to do something. And so like they showed one time when the clip just like broke and snapped and caught fire. And Joyce was like, well, the backdrop for her was just basically a big piece of paper, like a giant piece of paper. And somebody had drawn a cuckoo clock up on the wall, you know, to make it look like, oh, this is her house. It was cheap. It was the 1950s. Nobody cared. So at one point, one of those things broke and she's like trying to ad lib and sit there. So Fred, from behind the screen, put on this little old tiger puppet that he had been given years ago and punched a hole right through where the clock was. And then started talking to her as Daniel Tiger. Awesome. And I lost my shit at that point. Like, I'm 10 minutes in, and I'm like, this is fucking great. So that's where this started. And then they went through – it was a combination of clips from the show, people talking now, and an artist animated some of the, like, times they'd be talking about. Like, then there were some darker times. But it was never an animated Fred Rogers. It was always an animated Daniel Tiger. Because as his wife said at one point, she's like, Daniel was Fred. Like, of all the puppets, Daniel was Fred. Until later on, when we started getting up into the 90s and the world really started getting dark and tumultuous. She's like, I really feel like at that point, Fred became King Friday.
Yeah.
Like, he was mad at the world. He didn't like things changing. He didn't like the way that things were going. It was a great movie. I'm not going to go into all the details.
Please don't, actually. I want to see it.
It was wonderful. That one story, though, just watching him punch his hand through.
That is amazing.
I was like, and the thing is, it was the same puppet all the way through.
Really?
Daniel was the same. That was something that had been given to him years back. And, I mean, they go through, they talk about his short-lived late-night show for adults. Primetime. Not like adults.
Right.
You know, he was trying to bring that kind of stuff to adults. Didn't translate as well. And why he came back, his thoughts on different things, his thoughts on children's programming, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and they'd show clips of other things like Sesame Street, like the chef falling down the stairs and getting all the pies all over him and stuff like that. And how he felt that kids deserve better than that. And how blunt he was. With so many things, you know, there were episodes on there that I never knew about. Like when Bobby Kennedy got assassinated.
Yeah.
They brought it up.
Yeah.
Daniel Tiger talked to Lady Aberlin and they showed the clip and he's like, what does assassination mean? I'm like, this is a kid's show.
Yeah. No, he covered everything. I remember hearing about that before. Yeah.
Because he wanted to treat kids like kids, but he also wanted to respect them.
Yeah.
And it was a great movie. Like they say that a lot of audiences at the end were crying. No. But, you know, one of his sons did say at one point, he goes, yeah, it was tough growing up, basically having your father be the second coming of Christ. And they did say one thing that made me laugh a lot. Well, they were talking about, like, you know, oh, Queen Sarah was obviously our mother. And then they showed his wife and, you know, you're like, oh, okay. And they're like, and Lady Elaine Fairchild. Nobody really ever wanted to ask completely, but we're pretty sure that was our Aunt Elaine. And they brought her on screen, and she goes, ta-da! And it looked like her. And she goes, she was a witch. What can I say? And his boys said that when they would have dinner at night.
That's hilarious,
When they'd have dinner at night, this is the last anecdote, he would, like, if he had to get real with them, and he had to talk about something that was unpleasant, he'd switch over in Lady Elaine's voice. And they were like, oh, shit, it just got real. Like, they knew that that's when it got real, was when he switched over. Because he did the voices of all the puppets.
Yes, he did, yeah.
And it was just a great, it was a great
flick. How long is it?
Hour and a half.
Okay.
I believe, yeah. Might have been 2 hours. I'll double check. But, yeah, it completely slipped my mind. I hadn't written it down. But, yeah, it was well worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
Both of us really enjoyed it. And, yeah, I strongly recommend anybody who grew up with Rogers or who, you know, has kids who liked Mr. Rogers when he was around, check it out. It's well worth it.
Nice. You know,
his wife does say at the end, she's like, if he was around now with the way that things have gone and how far backwards everything has gone, she goes, I don't know if he'd have the strength to do it. I don't know if he'd just put down his puppets and walk away.
Yeah.
And that's sad to think about.
It is sad to think about, yeah.
You know, but yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, what a great.
I think it's a great way to end.
Not yet.
Oh, sorry.
I got trailers.
Oh, that's right, trailers. Sorry.
It would have been a great way to end. but yeah, hold on. Anyway. Trailers real quick.
Yeah, sure.
Because there was nothing really that great, but I want to at least talk about them. They're actually creating the gender-flipped version of that movie with Mel Gibson, What Women Want.
Yeah?
This one's called What Men Want. And it's Taraji P. Henson.
Okay.
And she drinks some tea from a woman who's like a psychic. And the woman's like, oh, it might taste weird because of this, or it might be all the weed and the crack in it. And so she drinks it, and now she can read men's thoughts. And so she knows what men want.
Is it just sex, 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 sex?
They make lots of jokes. Like, you know, one guy, he's a delivery guy, and he's like looking at her, and he's thinking, yeah, that cloud you're walking through, that's my fart. And I went, no.
No, I've never once thought that.
No. I thought, oh, shit. I hope they don't realize that was me. So I'm all set with that. There's a movie coming out on Netflix this September called Next Gen. It's an animated movie. It's got a lot of good stars in it, like Michael Peña and Jason Sudeikis. Basically, everybody has robots.
Okay.
Kind of like the iPhones, you know, everyone's lining up for the sixth generation of robots, and this girl's like pissed because her mom likes the robot more than her. It's supposed to be an allegory about right. that. But by the end of it, like, there's a robot uprising, and
they always do.
Yep. It looks good. It looks really good. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a kid / adult movie.
Yep.
So check out that, Next Gen. There's another one on Netflix coming out that takes place in the 70s in Israel. It's supposed to be based on a true story of, it's called The Angel, and he's an assassin, or, you know, a government assassin type yep. thing. And it's the story of how they get their wings by, you know, killing. Right. But it was a tumultuous time in the 70s over there, so, yeah. Okay. Arizona with Danny McBride.
Ooh, I don't know what that's about, but it sounds good.
The first part of the trailer, and I watched these at work while I was working.
Right.
But I was testing it out, and yeah, I got away with it. He's, like, showing this woman around his house because he's kidnapped her, but he's got, like, the ski mask over his head. And so she's like, can I at least get up and walk around? He's like, sure. And she's like, oh, wow, are these your kids? And he's like, yeah, those are my kids. They're great. They're pictures on the fridge. He's like, you know, that's Jimmy and that's Betsy and blah, blah, blah. And look, that's me, and it's a picture of him. And then they both just, like, look at each other, and he's like, fuck. So it looks to be a good, funny movie with, like, he's a hitman or a kidnapper or something. He's got a lot of guns, period. But, yeah, it's going to be funny.
Nice.
And then today, this was the good one. They released the next trailer, the final trailer for season 2 of Iron Fist.
Oh, I saw that, and I avoided it.
Okay.
Because I'm just going to watch it anyway.
Yep. I am as well.
How was the trailer, though?
It was great.
Yep.
Colleen is in it a lot.
Yep. That's
Misty's in it.
Nice.
A lot more fighting.
Yep.
We get to see the iconic mask many times.
Nice.
It seems like in the beginning he's starting out as, you know, you've been out on the street every night. You're not coming to bed, and I can see how tired you are, you know. So it's the whole, now he's really trying to take the streets back. It's going to be good.
Nice.
Yeah.
When's that drop? I can't remember.
Soon.
September?
I think it's September, yeah. And the only other thing, and I wrote this down because of our mutual love of it, it's a video game thing, but They said, with no details, no publishing company, no developer, no nothing. They just said in a recent interview, they found out there is a new Evil Dead game coming out.
Ooh.
And that Bruce Campbell will be playing Ash.
Nice.
Yep.
So he's still going to voice Ash.
Yep. Sweet. So he will still be – they were like, nice. Bruce Campbell returns to Ash Williams. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, in a video game. I'm like, yeah. So.
All good.
Yep.
Awesome.
That's all I got.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks all for listening. And we should probably, when we post this, put a disclaimer that we spent 50 minutes talking about Sinner.
Oh yeah,
avoid that. But otherwise, you know where to find us on the Twitterverse. I'm Superstar Mel.
I'm the Quantum Geek G33K.
Thanks.
Talk to you next week.